number one coach. She's a nervous lady, anybody else?
Yeah.
Now, the thing about Nebraska is that...
All right, I'll meet you.
I guess can't see. The only thing is, Oklahoma's very quick. And the question is whether the Nebraska, which has a marvelous defense, is quick enough to contain their running, their quickness of their running attack. But I would say that the Nebraska defense, that I saw against Colorado, geez, I don't think anybody could ever beat it.
I hope.
But it's the quickness of Pruitt, they got a hold of him so fast.
I hope neither team has a bad day.
So they sort of go down and break the...
Well, they get greater than another day in the city.
Yeah.
All right, thank you. You follow up on it.
I will, Tom.
I will, right. Yeah. notes that's running out, it's pretty rather interesting, yes, because that's as closely held thing that ever we've ever had around here. Mitchell, of course, and just the two of us.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, of course. So you're welcome to that one if you'd like, I mean, I understand. That'd be good.
And I'm very sensitive to
Till October
14th, whatever.
That was it, November 14th, I understand.
All right, but now what I was going to get is trying to get you to evaluate this particular period, which is midway in your term, first term. And after, as I see it, please, you had made your major proposal, not only substance in the general field of reform, but also in the general field of foreign affairs, and in the field of reorganization of government and environment. So it seemed to me that I went back and over this material that you had, by this time, presented to your full program for your first term. And I have no idea of all the conclusions.
Yeah, no, I would say, I'd say the full program in terms of domestic policy, I mean in terms of foreign policy, except that there is still left, of course, the winding down of the, well, the completion of the Vietnam withdrawal program. That, however, is something which is certain. I mean, so there's no question. When do you come out with that?
But this will probably finish, I think, at the end of February.
End of February, fine. But you can say that there's nothing to do there. But the it's the and as far as the foreign policy is concerned, while we the announcements of the trip to Peking and Moscow, of course, will probably get, particularly the one to Peking, bigger public attention even than the trips themselves. I'm not sure. But of course, the real work remains to be done. Whether this is the extent to which these two, and everybody would have to call it historic summit meetings, the extent to which they will alleviate tensions between major powers, reduce the chances for confrontations in the future, remains to be seen. From a substantive standpoint, both of course can have a very great effect in that respect. I would certainly evaluating the two trips, I think it's important to have in mind the fact that they, as distinguished from the problem which obsesses most people, in other words, ending the war we're in, getting peace and saying, thank God, now we can lay down the burdens of world leadership, which is sort of a gut reaction that many Americans have today, which was reflected, of course, in their votes of the Senate on 4 April. As distinguished from that, which by itself in a first term, or for that matter in any president's term, would be an enormous achievement. A very significant achievement, ending a war, as they call it this one, ending it without humiliation, without defeating others, ending it in a way that we accomplished our objectives of the South Vietnam, resisting the efforts of the North Vietnamese communists to impose their rule by force over the South. That this would be a major achievement. Where, however, the two summits become important, it is not in terms, as I was saying,
sound too churchillian, but it is quite true. China is a particular example. China today is not a significant economic power. Japan, with 100 billion, produces more than China, 750 million, twice as much. And China today is a minimal nuclear power. But looking ahead 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, 750 million Chinese, who by that time will be 800 to 900 billion Chinese, will become a significant economic force in the world and inevitably a great and powerful military force in the world. It is destined to be a super military power if it wants to be, because of the capability of the Chinese people, because of the resources of the country, because of its where it is. Now, under these circumstances, no one sitting in this office could allow an opportunity to be missed, to attempt to avoid that time coming. Avoid a situation in which that time would come 10 or 15 years from now, when China was a massive power, both militarily and economically, with the United States and the PRC in confrontation with each other. No one, believe me, in the world it has less illusions about how gene effective, basically such things as goodwill trips, getting to know you, etc., how ineffective such cosmetics really have on great substantive differences, such as we have with China, such as we have with Russia. On the other hand, I am convinced that we are dealing here, in the case of both China and Russia, with pragmatists. They know what they want in the world. We know what we want in the world. If I am anything else, if nothing else, I am a pragmatist. With, I must say, perhaps a bigger dose of idealism than most realize. But nevertheless, I want to realize that the pages of history are strewn with the stories of idealists who simply weren't able to put their ideals into practice. And so here I know what our power is, what theirs is. I can project it into the future, and I can see developing a situation, a deadly peril hanging over the world of this powerful people, isolated from the rest of the world. Not in contact with the strongest free nation in the world. And it seemed to me that steps had to be taken to move on that problem. This does not mean that as a result of of this visit or the one with the Soviet, our differences will be resolved, that by getting to know each other, we're going to necessarily like each other. I'm not speaking of personal liking each other, I'm speaking of like each other's systems, like each other's foreign policy, like each other, whether we're going to agree. But I do believe that there are significant areas where mutual self-interest, the strongest being the interest of survival, avoiding national suicide. And this is something which has to
affect every major nuclear power firm. We'll find areas of agreement. So I would say that the forum also deals the initiatives, the major initiatives that have been taken. I mentioned China, you mentioned Russia, you mentioned Vietnam. I should also point out, however, there are, we have this very significant problem presently growing out of our balance of payments and so forth. Surcharges are established tax. That is one that should not concern. That is a temporary measure. There is no one who feels more strongly than I do that the United States can and must not build a wall around itself, draw out the competitive race with the new economic power bloc of Europe, which is probably going to be the strongest economic force in the world. The competition in the Soviet Union, the competition in the future of China, and of course, the growing competition of Japan, not to mention what could happen in the third world. Those were not for a moment. And I feel strongly that the United States can compete, it must compete, and we must do it not because we want to beat somebody else, but because we must do it for ourselves. Because whenever nations desire to cease to drive forward, cease to try to do their best, they cease to lead, they cease to be great. And I don't want to see that happen to this country. I particularly don't want to see us fail to meet that challenge while I'm in this office. So what we were simply doing with our new economic policy as far as its foreign aspects were taken was to get some shock treatment. But in the long run, the problem that the United States has, insofar as this whole international problem is concerned, is not so much the problem of our competitors abroad, but it's the problem of what we do at home. Of America, we cannot do. Sure, there are non-tariff barriers. There are burdens that we have carried that are more than we should carry. It's now time for more burden sharing. It's time for discrimination against the United States to come down. But on the other hand, in the final analysis, we must not have any illusions that it's a new game now, a new game in which we're no longer running against the clock as we were 25 years ago with no competitors in the world, but that we're in a real competition, fortunately peaceful competition, on the economic side with these five great superpowers. With regard to the domestic side, it really all relates to a pattern. As I see it, of course, first, you can look at America's economic problems in terms of what did the market do today? What's the unemployment rate? What is the rate of inflation? And how do we deal with that problem? Just talking to Carpenters about the price of corn. How do we get it up over a dollar? So forth. Believe me, I am, as a pragmatist, keenly aware of all those problems we work on. On the other hand, we are in a period now where the United States must realize that we can't afford inefficiency in business, inefficiency in labor, and inefficiency in government. We frankly become fat. We've been able to afford the luxury of being fat. We've been able to afford that because
what we have to do, what we have to do, is to examine our whole system. Examine it in terms of making it efficient in every respect, making it competitive to work. Now, on that, in that terms, it all fits into a pattern. On the economic side, you simply cannot allow the forces of inflation to run rampant, because you cannot have a healthy growth with inflation. So we have to fight it hard. We have to fight it hard, and fight it hard in a way that does not destroy the free system which creates growth. And that's why this phase two thing is a very delicate mechanism which we trust will work out. We want to do enough to deal with inflation, but not so much to be destroying freedom. And so it is in case of our problems on the unemployment. It would be easy to answer the problems of unemployment, simply huge doses of government spending, with frankly more military spending than we need and so forth, basing it on basic jobs as to a great extent they have been based due to the war situations we've had since World War II on military spending. But on the other hand, that also is not a healthy growth. And so our goal, which of course is contained in our foreign policy initiatives, of not only peace abroad, but a full employment in peacetime activities at home is very much fun. That is why when you look, for example, at the so-called new economic program, what we have put in there, and here's where I'm running, I want to lift the curtain on something we may be offering in the future, what we put in there with regard to the tax initiatives or incentives for business, whatever you want to call it, the job development deduction, whatever it is. Anyway, the purpose there is to encourage American business to bring their plants up to up to a competitive level where they can compete effectively in the world. You look around the world, the Japanese, the Germans, who are respectively number three and number four in the world. We are number one, Soviet Union, number two economically. The Japanese and the Germans have some of the most modern plants in the world because it's somewhat like the San Francisco fire. Remember the fire and the earthquake and everybody's, what a hell of a tragedy. San Francisco, how did it become the most beautiful city in the world? Would never have been that if they had not had the fire and the earthquake. And so the tragedy of war in Japan and Germany have a new economic plan. Probably a plan is better than if they had simply built on the old. Now America has been blessed with the fact that we have not had the devastation of war, but not only our physical plant, but even to an extent, and here we get to other things, even to an extent, our physical plant, not only in addition to our physical plant, our spirit, our economic policies, and practices of business, the practices of labor, and so forth, have become inefficient. They have not faced up to the realities of competition in the world abroad. Now let me come to another point that's very important. I think this competition thing. It is not a very significant thing in terms of how many jobs are created to have more markets abroad. I think that the total value of our exports, we're talking about 4 or 5% out of a $1 trillion economy. What difference does it make? The difference is, of course, that we are the biggest market in the world, others are pouring here. But another thing we should have in mind. we've got to have in mind is that divination or people lives on an island of themselves. They inevitably, just like a person, don't do as well as they would do if they are looking outward. I think the greatest danger that I see in America today is that because of the burdens we've carried since World War II, first Korea, fourth day, and then, of course, the negative of Vietnam, that America will turn inward not only militarily, diplomatically, but economically, and the rest, and say, oh, let's look to the problems of our cities and look to the problems of our own people, and these burdens and so forth and so on. Quotas and tariffs or what have you, they don't like particularly, but there is in this country among people that you know better, a latent isolationism, which is developing. And developing with what would seem to be the best of intentions. The idea is, my God, we've been trying to carry the burdens of the world all these times, and now it's time to look after our own people. What we have to realize is that America, by playing a world role, helps, of course, to make the world safe, not only for other nations, but for itself. Because if we lay down the burdens, I said in Chicago last night, it isn't that as it was in the old days, before World War II, when the British, the French, or some other great power might get up. There is no other free nation in the world because of what happened after World War II that can or will pick it up. And so if we lay it down, the vacuum's going to be filled. And you know by whom. But it's just that. It's the fact that here we as Americans face if we turn inward here, we not only run risks to our national security, but it will be a mortal blow to the vitality, the drive of the American spirit. America will be finished as a great people when America turns inward rather than outward. That is why I, of course, have supported such things as the space program going to the moon. Not because I ever thought there was anything on the moon. I hope they found something. But because it's there. That's why I supported the SSP. Despite the environmental standing, it was a very grave mistake. We lost it. Not so much. I think it was very important. The jobs that people talked about, maybe 50,000. The fact that America no longer is going to be the leader in commercial aircraft, which we will not be. But because when there is a new breakthrough in any area, a great people must at least try to be in the forefront there. And now, as I see it, it's very important that this country have an outward-looking foreign policy. It must have an outward-looking economic policy. And we must do that so that we will develop the inward strength and vitality that we need to continue to be a great people. Now, let me fold that back into the other thing. You've got the foreign policy, you've got the economic policy, and now you come to government. American management during the Korean, the Vietnamese War years, during the 60s, as a matter of fact, particularly the latter half of the 60s, simply got bad and inefficient. They got so used to it that now they are so many of them just don't know how to compete anymore. And they're always these people with strong, vigorous management leaders that used to say, we can do it, we'll sell, and so forth. So many of them say, what's the government going to do? And labor has also had some of the same problems. This inevitably happens as societies become older, as they become more obsolete. When I say totally obsolete, I mean the Capitol organization at the present time just doesn't speak to our times. It's irrelevant. One of the reasons, for example, that we have not had as many cabinet meetings, very practical ones. I don't believe in having meetings unless they're useful. And cabinet meetings, not because the cabinet people aren't doing a great job running their departments they're at, but because, you see, it's proliferated. They represent certain constituencies, but it is not organized. This government is not organized in a way that it can really efficiently deal with the problems, the national problems, as well as international ones. Now, coming to the other things, welfare reform, revolution, and then many people have not paid much attention to it. What we recommended in the field of health is not just simply adding more to old. It's a very significant reform, rejecting what I think would be a utterly disastrous program of a British type socialized medicine program, but nevertheless, reforming the present outmoded system of health care and health insurance. Education. Here, this has been a tough one because educators are one of the toughest groups in the country to reform. They believe, after all, that they know best. But education needs reform. It just doesn't need more money. Money will not solve it. More money will simply, in my view, mean that keep the educators from developing the new ideas and the new approaches that are essential if education is going to be relevant to our times. And in the other areas, the environment, here, of course, it isn't just a question of cleaning up the water, the lakes, the air. These are, of course, problems we can all see. And so we must work to find ways to clean up the air. We must work to find ways to clean up the water. That's a question of research and a question of priorities, a question of money. And we're putting a lot in those directions. But looking beyond the environment, we must look at national growth. And here, there are two areas, and now come to the two areas where there are still some unfinished agenda as far as the first 4 years are concerned. One, the national growth policy. We will have some things to say about that as we get into the State of the Union. And you remember I opened the curtain on that in my State of the Union in 1969.
Yeah.
And this is coming up. We're finally coming up, but I'm for having some things to say on that. The other is related to the business of making American industry more competitive. And here, what we'll be getting into is to take the great concept of NASA, its organization and the rest, and apply in the United States a lot more government resources to applied industrial research, not just general research and so forth and so on. Applied industrial research, and not just going to the moon, but in industry general. This is the whole Jobs for Peace program, as you see. We're doing some heavy thinking about that, and that will be one of the sentences. Also, the other area, which I can't tell you for sure is going to come up next time, but is under serious consideration, is some more major tax reform. Now, beyond that, that's about where we stand. But you can figure the tax reform, which I think is very much the tax reform bill we had the other time was sort of a hodgepodge. It was the best we could get, probably better than the old bill. But this country really needs some tax this tax reform intended to lead to our national growth or to relieve tax payments, which...
Relieve. It's to have the burden better carried more fairly, basically. Let's put it that way. Tax reform. But in the case of the research thing, research for the purpose, the Japanese, the Germans, governments are putting enormous amounts into research for applied research. I'm not too much up on it at the moment, but Pete Peterson has worked in this field, and John Erlich and others, we've got some first class.
First, as the operator is to restore the competitive position of your hand rocks.
You've got to restore the competitive position, I said, but it gets back to something that you wrote about 3 years, 2 years ago or so, when we first came out. You said it's necessary for a president in some way for people to lift the people up, that a people need to think of something other out of themselves, bigger than themselves and the rest. It's very difficult now. When you're in a war, that has it. When you're going to the moon, that has it. Maybe at times such problems, such things as the environment and so forth may do it. But I think in the present time, it is essential that we revitalize the American competitive spirit. That's why I talk competition. I know people get sick of it. But I believe in it, and I believe the country has to get that competitive spirit back, or I think that the United States may be at the beginning of the end of its period as world leader, which has only existed, as you know, since World War II. Now, this is too early for that to happen, and it should not happen, and it need not happen, and I'm not pessimistic about it. But here at a time when we're first in production, and we're still first in military power overall, despite some Soviet advantages in long-range missiles, is the point of greatest danger. It's the point of greatest danger. It is just, but they mean well solid some people. That always happens. Too much, over too long a time. It's on. And you've got to get this government lean down. It's got to be lean and strong and vigorous. We've got to, that's why the welfare thing, we changed the welfare thing from the family assistance to a lot more emphasis on work requirement. And there'll be more as time goes on. And that's why I talked about the dignity of work. And not because I want kind of people to get up and pick and shovel. Because it's not because we need the work done so much as part of it, but it's because the individual needs to do it for himself. The spirit of self-reliance and so forth is considered to be the Protestant, small p ethic.
We put it in your Liberty speech for the very reason.
That relates to the problem.
I had to enjoy all this material, rather formally, the position that your momentum may have slowed in 1970. Perhaps due to a number of different things, the election, the massive weight of your program itself, and the fact that at that time you had not yet brought under control certain outside factors like the quite the drift in foreign affairs.
Yes.
What you later brought up in
Well, we also had to go through the traumatic experience of Cambodia and the massive demonstrations. And that, of course, tends to slow you down and paralyze you at that time. And Cambodia, incidentally, and Laos later, now, while our critics will not give us any credit for it, have now proved to be, that's why our casualties are 8 this week rather than 100. I mean, Cambodia brought them down in 1970, and Laos brings them down in 1971. And now we get the payoff of both in 72. But be that as it may, it was rough when we went through it. People forget how that period of time. But you're right about that. You're right. It was that the
might as well do it right.
We made some gains in the Senate, we made some losses, but it was an off-year election there, lost the governor and so forth. But then you tend to chin up. In other words, I believe in competition in politics. Believe me, if you didn't have people kicking you around or criticizing or breathing down your neck, and we'd sit here fat and sassy, we wouldn't care much about it. Actually, the truth. No, I'm not. Despite the fact, of course, we have to fight back from time to time, I'm not. And I'll speak up my critics and press and all of this. They need to do better. It's like the,
it was a little bit as if a new administration would begin. It seemed to me, after the election.
After seven?
Yeah. It was then as if the administration had begun again.
Yeah, that's right. We came on with revolutionary, we came on with the new American Revolution.
It is.
And it'll come. Government reorganization in the past, there's no question about it. Not all of it. Not this time. But we started it, and it's going to come, surely, because it's the right thing to do. Revolutionary will come. It's the right thing to do. A new health program, probably along the lines of Richardson's work, is a very involved, will probably come. And our education reforms will come. Let alone the environment, the others, which are, others have also pushed. But if we hadn't put these out, they would never see the light of day. You understand there have been administrations around here for many years that have done anything about revenue sharing, government reorganization, health reform, and so forth. A lot of talk. But you're jolted into action sometimes by elections, by critics, and by the needs of the time. And so it is now. Now let me say that I would not say that though with regard to the foreign policy initiative. You've got to put that in a different book. This is one question you'll have to make, somewhat of a self-serving statement. I had to call those signals myself. I've had very good advice, but my plans with regard to the Soviet, my friend, the American, the Chinese, are plans that I have. That have been long, and frankly, long-headed, long-range. The idea that, the trip to China sort of grew out of sort of a few messages that popped back and forth here and there, and the answer were dropped, and it's nonsense. Not true. And the same with the Soviet. If they work out that way, any meetings at high levels that come accidentally or quickly or at the wrong time are destined to fail. A meeting has a good chance to fail, even if it's well planned, well advanced. It has very little chance to succeed if it isn't planned. I mean, the Glassboro may be an example.
In other words, you can have options with these.
Exactly. I have a determination of what we want to do with the Soviet, the arms control, and so on. Let me put it this way. I can see when we came in that we were reaching a time of nuclear parity with the Soviet. I saw that we then had to make a decision to go one of two ways. We either had to make a decision of negotiation, that's why I use the word negotiation rather than confrontation, or we had to go hard on it. In other words, we had to start rebuilding because the 60s, the United States lost its enormous nuclear match. So it was either negotiate or escalate, as far as the arms race is concerned, and other areas as well. With regard to the Chinese, as I wrote an article on it long ago, but you know that the Chinese thing is all part of a long process where, again, not because my attitudes toward communism and all that sort of thing have changed at all, just as theirs have changed about me. There's no question about that. They know me and I know them. But on the other hand, it gets back to the pragmatist and the office. But here we've got it. In other words, the Soviet initiative couldn't take place before this time. We weren't ready and they weren't ready. The Chinese initiative couldn't take place before this time because it took that much time to prepare the way for it.
Probably too much. Never too much. Where do you go? You're going to leave in January, is it?
Where?
China.
Well, no, pretty soon. I'll tell you this. It'll be before, you can figure 2 months before the other one. See?
2 months from China?
Yeah, that's the ballpark.
You know, I don't want to come home, what if?
No, the other one is in May. You know, I
had all that's in May.
Yeah, so that one's set for late May, so it's 2 months before the other.
I understand.
Because of the very well into laying out my throat.
You want to